We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, and I'm thrilled to introduce my new podcast, TE1. TE1 will chronicle a 60-year evolution of the tight end position, from its origins as an obscure, overlooked blocking role to the versatile superstar position that it is today. I'll explore the evolution of the position through conversations with some of the all-time game-changing tight ends. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability. The same attributes it takes to be a tight end.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show covering the serious and mocking the ridiculous NFL news of the last week. I'm Blair Andrews. My co-host, as always, is Hassan Rahim. Hassan, how's it going?
Man, it's going great. You know, this, as always, just thankful to have football back. And I mean, today was one of the days where you're just reminded how brutal of a sport this was. So it's a bit of a bummer watching a lot of these star players and a lot of these you know, these athletes who put their bodies on the line, unfortunately, by taking down these like injuries that just are terrible, terrible. So wishing them all the best.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of big injuries today that are going to be shaking up a lot of teams, a lot of lineups, but yeah, it's a lot to talk about. We have no guests today, so let's just jump right in with George Kittle missing the game with an injury. The San Francisco 49ers turned to Jordan Reed, who had a strong outing. Reed caught 7 of 8 targets for 50 yards and 2 touchdowns. So, Hassan, do you think Jordan Reed has carved out a role for himself even when Kittle returns?
Yeah, so this is actually a fairly, really good question. The only reason Reed was on our radar is because our friends Packerian and Peter Overzet, they actually bid for him in our quad-managed team. And they won him, and we started him in FFPC, which is, you know, tight end premium. And you know, he did pretty well, like with the 27.5 FFPC points. Although, you know, Shanahan was saying, well, this role is going to be limited. There's only going to be a handful of snaps. But the issue is with this offense, they're not that many pass catchers. Like we knew wide receiver was really sort of the crutch for this team. But man, oh man. Like these guys really don't have anybody right now, unfortunately. And Debo suffered that setback too. So, you know, going forward, yeah, I do think there is a little bit of a role here for Jordan Reed. Now, look, today's game is not really indicative. They're playing against the New York Football Jets, who are just, I don't know what they're doing. Like are they like Adam Gase? Like, I don't know. Like, all of it's bad for them, right? And then, so when you look at this, like Reed led the team in targets with 8. Then it was Kendrick Bourne who caught like 4 targets for 67 yards and no touchdowns. And then you got like rookie Ayuk, who's coming off that hammy, but he had like 3 targets and he caught 2 for 21. Trent Taylor, who just, like, I don't know, man, like two catches for 10 yards, like just stuff where it's just people who are going nowhere shouldn't be a thing, right? And so interestingly, like Jerick McKinnon didn't get much work in the receiving game, but Devin Coleman did. I don't know how much we can take away from this game itself, but like Reed did a good job as like the focal point of this offense, which is fine. Given that we don't know how long Debo's recovery timeline will be, especially because coming off that Jones fracture, I do think that Reed will see a lot of work going forward. My bigger question for you here, like, what are your thoughts on that Jimmy G, like, injury that Raheem Mostert, like, might have a sprained MCL? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, I think it even, you know, sort of confirms what you were saying about how there's maybe not that much we can take from this game. If Garoppolo is going to miss any time, I think Reed caught both of his touchdown passes from Garoppolo and didn't do a whole lot after Nick Mullins came in. So yeah, we'll kind of have to see whether this injury keeps Garoppolo out for a while. Mostert, obviously, you know, he had that one long touchdown run and was awesome. And I think after he went out, McKinnon kind of picked up right where he left off with a touchdown.
Just a big run, yeah. His own.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think McKinnon can probably pick up most of the slack if Mostert has to miss time. Yeah, I'm not too worried about the team. You know, we've seen them kind of be able to play with just whoever is on the field. That's one thing that the 49ers are good at that not a lot of other teams are, is that they can kind of put anyone in the game and produce. So, yeah, I think it'll be hard to really predict where the targets are going to go, where the carries are going to go, where we're going to get fantasy production. I think you'd expect to see Ayuk with a bit larger of a role going forward. So, yeah, it's hard to take a lot away from this game. Like you said, I think we'll have to wait for more news on, you know, what these injuries mean for the future. Yeah, I don't know. Are you buying this kind of McKinnon, you know, 77-yard, 1 touchdown performance? It was only on 3 carries, so I don't know. Does it make you want to, like, add him in shallow leagues, trade for him?
I don't know how much you're going to trade for him. I don't know how much I care to trade for him. I mean, like, so Tevin Coleman, like, 14 carries, 12 yards. Like, I don't know how he's going to remain that inefficient. We do know the Jets are pretty good at stopping the run, right? So when you look at, like, what Raheem Mostert and McKinnon did, and you strip out the one long run. So McKinnon had like, a 55-yarder, and Mostert had, like, an 80-yarder, right? Like, the Jets are still pretty good at clamping down on running games. So, yeah, I don't know how much I really want to give up. I do know that if you were drafting both Coleman and McKinnon late, you're looking pretty okay here. I'm really bummed for Mostert, though, because he was, like, the subject of a lot of, like, hate, like, this offseason. I don't know if I call it, like, hate. Like, hate seems too strong, but basically, like, why you should shy away from him when, like, you know, I mean, like, this is kind of, like, the kind of success, like, he's the kind of success story that you want. Because, like, I mean, the sad truth of the matter is sort of, like, at least I view it, is that Mostert's kind of the guy everyone wished McKinnon was, right? And, like, McKinnon is also fairly electric. It's pretty good to see, and it's awesome to see that, like, his multiple knee surgeries haven't slowed him down. But, like, Mostert just does this, man. Like, the guy, you know, like, the guy just, like, he's kind of almost like a, like, an Aaron Jones-esque, like, big play type of guy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we saw McKinnon kind of having that role too, but yeah, it's, I don't know. We've seen this out of this offense for a long time with Breida last year too. So, I don't know. Is everyone here kind of like a system running back? I don't know. I mean, Mostert does have the, yeah, he's got the speed and he's, well, yeah, he's definitely interesting.
mainly because like Shanahan wanted him, you know, like he went out and got him for this squad, and like we would have seen Mostert do something had the poor guy not broken his arm in preseason. You know, like Mostert's been a freak in preseason, like just freakishly good. Like, you know, like Philip Lindsay level type of like boys among men type of performances. And so, you know, when unfortunately Mostert broke his arm and he didn't get much on because he was supposed to be the RB3 behind Hyde and McKinnon, or McKinnon and Hyde. Yeah, I can't remember who the RBs were that year. And just, yeah. You know, it's good to see that when he was given the opportunity, he had, like, it took a bunch of injuries for him to get the opportunities. But when he got it, he was so electric with it. Like, it's hard to put that guy back in the bottle once he's out there. And, like, I mean, Mostert's kind of the guy who everyone wants. I mean, like, the guy ran track at Purdue. Like, he's a freak plus athlete, was a converted wide receiver. Like, the only reason, like, I need to know why fantasy analysts were kind of like down on him as a player. I guess it's maybe because it's old, but like he never really got this level of opportunity before, you know? And then on top of that, like, I mean, everyone chases these converted quarterbacks or converted wide receivers like Antonio Gibson, but like not Mostert, I guess. I mean, hey, you know what I mean? Like, I guess it makes sense, right?
Yeah, and like McKinnon too.
Right. And like, but not Raheem Mostert for some reason.
Right. Exactly.
So
even though he's probably the most athletic of
all of them, of right?
Of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just like kind of a joke at this point, right? Like just cause he's been around long enough and people haven't tracked him and like, you know, he wasn't a combine, like they didn't watch his combine. So that maybe there's no real attachment to it, but like, I don't know, like, I don't know how much you really, really need to, you know, follow a prospect or root for him to like, not be a prospect anymore, but like, just a veteran who continues to get roles and why you can't, I don't know, like why he wasn't a good pick, especially at ADP. He was fairly depressed by the end of it. So like, I'm hoping he's healthy and he can come back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, by now we've seen enough to know that like, he's for real, I think.
Oh, for
especially
sure.
After today.
Hello folks, Colm Kelly here from RotoViz Overtime, a podcast I host along with Sean Siegel. And in just a little moment, we'll jump straight into the podcast. Before we do so, I want to let you know, as a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% of a RotoViz NFL pass right now on the RotoViz.com website. It gives you access to all of our content and tools. All you have to do is add the code 2020RVRadio at checkout or by going to RotoViz.com/podcast for more information. And of course, while you're listening to the podcast on the network, helps us out a lot if you can rate and review on your favorite podcast app. I really do appreciate that. As I mentioned at the start, RotoViz Overtime with Sean Siegel twice a week. If you haven't already checked it out, be sure to do so after this show. But let's get straight into it. Enjoy the podcast.
Here's another guy who people were like, oh, he's going to regress. His rushing touchdowns, unsustainable, blah, blah, blah. Aaron Jones rushed 18 times for 168 yards and 2 TDs. And he also got 4 of 8 targets for 68 yards, an additional score in the Packers' week 2 win over the Lions. You know, but Davante Adams, he suffered a hamstring injury and his ankle basically slowed down for the entire game. Like the offense was run through Jones as it was all of last year, right? You know, despite Jamal Williams getting some run in the offense, it's clear that Aaron Jones is the centerpiece of this offense. You know, do you think Jones has carved out a bigger role for himself, even if Adams comes back fully healthy next week?
Yeah, I mean, Jones already had one of the biggest roles for a running back that you could want. So it's kind of hard to see it getting much bigger, unless, I guess, Adams has to miss more time. But I mean, you're talking about someone last week who was, I think, the only running back who had double digit expected points as a receiver and a runner. You know, and obviously this week he was awesome. So yeah, it's hard to see his role growing much. I think, you know, the question that is in the back of my mind when it comes to Aaron Jones is, how long, you know, if he has a down game coming up over the next few weeks, how long before we see A.J. Dillon being worked into the game? I mean, when Jones is rushing for 168 yards and scoring 2 touchdowns and getting 8 targets, then that's not much of a worry. But, you know, if he's not as efficient 1 week, you know, when do the Packers start saying, maybe we should check out that rookie we just spent a lot of capital on? Is that something that you're also worried about if you own Aaron Jones?
No, I mean, the bad news is AJ Dillon was by far and away the worst, like second worst rusher on this offense. The worst being Tim Boyle. So that just like he is, I mean, like that just shows you kind of how far he is. So against Minnesota, he had like two carries and, you know, that was fine. Today in like basically mop up duty, he had five carries and he had 17 yards, like 3.5, 4 yards per carry. He was like out carried by Jamal Williams, who had like 8 for 63. Like he had 8 touches and he put up 63 yards and he had about 8 yards a carry. And, you know, neither of those two were used at all in the receiving game. So they're exclusively relegated to mop-up duties here, which is nice. Well, even if not, it's nice to see LaFleur and company decide, oh, yeah, Aaron Jones is our primary pass catcher in, like, neutral and negative and slightly positive script. Like, we're going to use him, like, as our primary guy.
Yeah. So I guess that's the question, though. Do you trust this performance with 8 targets to carry forward? Or is it just kind of Aaron Jones had the hot hand? He was making guys miss today, so we kept throwing him the ball. I mean, because last year it was more of a split between Jones and Jamal Williams, where Jones was used as the rusher and Williams was getting the targets. So, you know, I'm almost thinking in a game that Green Bay doesn't win by, you know, 21 points, maybe things look quite a bit different.
Man, yeah, your guess is as good as mine. And so I'm actually kind of excited to see what happens here, like as we go down the line. So like, again, ideally in an ideal world, LaFleur decides that Aaron Jones is his primary receiving RB, right? I don't see 8 targets again, but I mean, this is a fairly fragile receiver core behind Davante Adams, right? Like, I'm old enough to remember when people were chasing Alan Lazard in the 9th round or the 8th round or whatever it was as like Green Bay's wide receiver 2. When it's clear from the targets, like he might actually be lower than that, right? Like Marquez Valdes-Scantling has re-supplanted him on the depth chart, right? And with ESB on IR, right. And so and MVS was going undrafted in most leagues. Right. So I guess so 5 years in a row, I guess now. No, wait. When was Davante Adams' big breakout as a wide receiver 3 drafted? Was that I can't remember now. Oh, was that 3 years ago? Was that 2017? Yeah. So for 3 years
when he was drafted.
No, 2015 was when he was drafted. So 3 years in a row, they've
14. Yeah.
Yeah. So but remember like when Davante Adams had all those fumbling issues and he was going after Cobb and Nelson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like ever since then, like fantasy gamers have just sort of chosen and overdrafted the wrong Green Bay wide receiver, right? So this year is no different. So yeah, I mean like it's interesting to see what happens with Adams though, because like I am worried a little bit because of this hamstring and ankle issues. Was getting a lot of love this week as being in a quote-unquote smash spot, and the only thing he succeeded in doing was smashing your cash lineups if you played him in cash. So that was good. So I guess that's pretty all right if you played him last week, like you know we did well, but now this we played him this week and you know puts up a dud, right? So I mean this is going to be interesting to follow because I do think that Aaron Jones. In my mind, to me, he was always the wide receiver 2 on this offense. So his ADP was fairly justified in the first 2 rounds. It was a little weird seeing him go after a bunch of the RBs that he did. But hey, whatever, that's on everybody else, right? Learn to draft a little bit better. But I do think that Aaron Jones, as far as like the primary running back, like as a pass catcher goes, like his role is unquestioned. And I do think that, I mean, he's just fairly electric. The guy just makes stuff happen, right? Like he busts off like a 75-yard touchdown, like anytime he gets the ball, man. Like I don't think his body can hold up for a full season getting 18 carries, but like that's where you get your Jamal and like AJ Dillon in. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens when Green Bay are faced in these with teams who can actually keep it close with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Next 2 weeks at New Orleans, and then they're home against Atlanta. And I mean, we obviously have yet to see what New Orleans offense looks like exactly without Michael Thomas, in case he's out a couple more weeks, but should be a very different game script, I would think. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, without Devontae, supposing Devontae Adams is not ready to go in week three and they're rolling out, you know, MVS as the wide receiver one, do you see them? How does this offense look in that case? Are they even scoring points?
I don't know. It's going to be at the Saints, right? And so, like, let's see what happens with Michael Thomas. But last week, this offense, I mean, last season, this offense flowed through Aaron Jones at that point. Well, they were using Jamal Williams as well as a lot. So it'll be interesting. I can't tell you, like, the only thing I can really state with confidence in that regard is that MVS probably locks in as their wide receiver one. And he should probably get there. Lazard becomes interesting as well. But I do think Aaron Jones just becomes like the guy who you want to lock in. And like, I don't, and like the guy who takes the biggest hit is Aaron Rodgers. Like he'll be scraping to get like 11 or 12 fantasy points.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's, you know, you would hope that they, I guess, continue to use Aaron Jones the way they did in the passing game. But based on sort of what they did last year, I don't know how reasonable that is in a game with a different script. But yeah, we'll see. Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities. Whether there are corner stores, our coffee spots, or our favorite shops, local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders, they call us by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile to support us and our community. And right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So now it's time for us to return the favor. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. And even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You need to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30. All right, let's get into the game we are going to be playing this week, another edition of Rookie Breakout or Fakeout, starting off with one of the rookie quarterbacks who just got his first start of the season. Justin Herbert completed 22 of 33 passes for 311 yards, one touchdown and one interception in the Chargers' Week 2 overtime loss to the Chiefs, adding 18 yards and a score as a rusher.
This was a bit of a weird situation, just because Tyrod was a surprise scratch. You know, it sounds like he had like some chest pain or something, and I don't, like, it's just really difficult to tell right now, like, is it real? You know, do we believe it? Like, it just, I don't know, right? Like, I mean, it could be possible that head coach Anthony Lynn is lying about Tyrod, right? Like, just, oh, he suffered a chest injury, he injured his ribs in the warm-up. And, you know, it's Herbert time, right? The issue here is I think Herbert played well enough here at home against the Chiefs, you know, to where it's kind of Baker Mayfield-esque, where you're just like, well, it's not like they got sick of Tyrod's like play, but like mm-hmm. Anthony Lynn probably just took a reason to just play his guy. And this is like, you know, tough scene for anyone who thought that like Tyrod was gonna keep the job all season long, if only because you're going to find out that a lot of these guys tend to, like, highly drafted rookie quarterbacks tend to start sooner rather than later. And I just wonder how long it'll be before Anthony Lynn commits to make the switch. So, like, you know, I mean, even if Tyrod, like, gets a start next week and he starts to struggle, I think that his lease will be very, 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 very short. And that's a bit of a shame. I do like Tyrod, but he looked really terrible the first week. You know, to that end, Herbert looked pretty sharp. I thought he did an okay job marching the offense up and down the field. My biggest mistake, as always, is, you know, in leagues where I drafted Justin Herbert in Superflex Dynasty Leagues, I, you know, stupidly traded for Tyrod, which is just something you shouldn't bother ever doing if you're going to draft these early drafted elite rookie quarterbacks. There's no need to handcuff because they're going to get playing time sooner rather than later. Just as a reminder for anyone out there, I wasn't sure Herbert was particularly any good. But he did a good job commanding this offense. Mm-hmm. Like, he got Eckler involved, he got Keenan Allen involved, he got Hunter Henry involved. Mike Williams, unfortunately, left out in the cold. But, you know, excited to see what happens next, and interested in the saga that's the Los Angeles Chargers, which, I mean, this is the most interesting this team has been in, like, a long, long time, right? So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it would be fairly surprising if they did go back to Taylor after this. I mean, obviously you would have preferred, or they would have preferred, a win, but taking the Chiefs to overtime, I think I'm hopeful that, you know, the coaches notice that that's not insignificant, you know, former Super Bowl champs last year's, or reigning Super Bowl champs, going to overtime with them. So yeah, I definitely think Herbert did enough today to get the start the rest of the season. So I think it would be pretty disappointing if they went back to Taylor.
Antonio Gibson rushed 13 times for 55 yards and a touchdown in Washington's week 2 loss to the Cardinals. He also added one reception for -1 yards.
Yeah, this is a weird stat line for him. For someone coming in as a converted wide receiver to get only one reception for -1 yard, you'd hope for a lot more involvement in the passing game. It's definitely nice that he got that touchdown, and he was pretty good as a rusher, which is, you know, a nice change of pace from last week. So, I mean, yeah, I'm hopeful to see what he can do going forward, but I think you definitely want to see more receptions and more targets for him. So, yeah. I can see this being a sign of more work coming his way, which I think is definitely a good thing. So I'm optimistic. Clyde Edwards-Helaire rushed 10 times for 38 yards and caught 6 of 8 targets for 32 yards in the Chiefs' week 2 overtime win over the Chargers.
Yeah, this is, I mean, so like, I'm leaning breakout, man. Like with CEH, right? Like, I don't really like it's really hard for me to care about like this rushing stat line when the complaint, literally the complaint last week, was he's not getting targeted in the receiving game. Like, you know, you only get like one of these, right? And it's like, oh, now he can't convert on the goal line. Well, one thing at a time, guys. Like, this is fine. I don't care about the rushing stat line. The more encouraging thing is like he caught 6 of his 8 targets for 32 yards. Like, that to me is like far more important than worrying about like his goal line use, right? Like, because like the big thing about his goal line use on Thursday Night Raw, I mean, whatever it was, Thursday Night Football, in front of like, you know, Island game, first game of the season, he's getting stuffed repeatedly. And like the only lesson you can take away from that, like, frankly, is, oh, wow, he's not getting into the end zone and they're still giving him the ball anyway. Like, that, if that wasn't your initial reaction, make it yours, because like that's the important part, right? Like that's mm-hmm. like that's the important thing here. And it's exciting to see that, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, really all that depressed his like ADP was the fact that he was like was not gonna like he was theoretically threatened by Damian Williams, which yeah, sure, whatever, it all changed after the holdout, but he's a very electric talent. I mean, 8 targets, man, like that's exciting, you know, and if they start using him and like, you know, running actual wheel routes and stuff, like the kind of stuff that he did at LSU, oh my god, wheels way up. Chase Claypool caught 3 of 3 targets for 88 yards and a touchdown in the Steelers' week 2 win against the Broncos.
Yeah, I think that this could be a breakout. I mean, Claypool is, I think, the top freak score athlete in this class. He's, you know, he's a big, fast guy who gives the Steelers an element that they didn't really have before between, you know, Washington and Deontay Johnson and Juju, that kind of big sort of classic alpha receiver body type. So I can definitely see them trying to get him more involved in the future, probably at the expense maybe of Eric Ebron. But yeah, it was encouraging to see him get that long reception today. I think it was probably most of his yards came on that one reception. Oh, I mean, definitely most of them, but maybe almost all of them. But yeah, it's funny. Sean and I picked him up in our main event last week, kind of almost a little bit by accident because we're loaded at wide receiver, but he was just really intriguing. So we added him. And then we're right before week 1, and then before week 2, we dropped him for some running backs who ended up doing nothing. So I don't know what maybe we'll try and get him back again. But yeah, we almost could have had this performance on our bench, which would have been, I don't know, kind of funny. T.Y. Hilton caught 3 of 5 targets for 28 yards in the Colts' week 2 win over the Vikings.
Yeah, this is not a rookie, but we included him, if only because he's playing like a rookie, right? Like, I mean, what is this?
Yeah, I was going to say, this should be a Michael Pittman one.
Yeah, well, whatever, folks. You're getting T.Y. Hilton, who really is just, oh my god. Like, I don't know what this dude's issue is. He's terrible. Like, what on earth? I mean, like, this is a shame, right? Like, he's for the 2020 season, here's his stats: 9 targets, 4 receptions, 53 yards, no touchdowns, right? Like, and this is at home. This is in a dome. So what's happening? Well, I actually probably have an idea of what's happening. Like the 3 of 5 for 5 targets, encouraging. 3 targets, you know, 3 receptions, encouraging. 28 yards, not really encouraging against the Vikings' absolute trash-tastic secondary, right? Especially at home in a dome. I mean, like, this is like Michael Pittman, for example, 6 targets, 4 catches, 37 yards. Mo Alie-Cox, never done this before, 6 targets, 5 catches, 111 yards. Then you have Zach Pascal with 4 targets, 3 catches, 19 yards. Jonathan Taylor emerging. Yeah, exactly. Right. And this is also, keep in mind, Paris Campbell suffered a knee injury. Mm-hmm. Hilton losing out to Pittman and Mo Alie-Cox and has Pascal hot in his heels, like, sort of lines up pretty nicely with a lot of the research that you've done pertaining to wide receivers who don't bounce back. And like, I thought Hilton fit all the profile. Like, he's just been fairly inefficient over the last few seasons, even with Rivers under center. Like, he's just really, really not a very, like, he just isn't who people thought he is, and he will not be that again, I think. Like, if you own him and manage leagues, do you trust starting him ever?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't own him in managed leagues.
Right, but even in best ball, like, how often do you think he's going to crack your lineup, right? Because, like, where he was going by the end of it, like, after all these, like, positive news blurbs started coming out about the Colts and Colts camp and so on and so forth, everyone flocked to, like, Hilton. And it's just like, whoa, his price was fairly elevated prior to this, and, like, now it's just I never registered when he used to get drafted. He just was never in, like, I'd see Hilton go, and I'd just, like, stare at it. Like, oh, who's this guy? You know, like, it's just been so long since he's actually been a fantasy viable asset. And it's kind of unfortunate because he used to be pretty dope back all those years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he was that bad. He's been that bad recently. I mean, one thing is that he never really fit the Rivers passing profile, right? That's not Rivers' game and Hilton's game don't exactly mesh. So I think there were a lot of reasons to be concerned going into this season. And we're seeing that play out where, Rivers is targeting the running backs and tight ends, and Hilton is probably going to have a lot more disappointing games.
Justin Jefferson caught 303 targets for 44 yards in the Vikings' week 2 loss to the Colts.
Yeah, I guess this is a breakout. I mean, the Vikings maybe are not going to be throwing a lot, but I think the big thing to take away from this performance is that he outplayed Adam Thielen. So, Thielen had 8 targets and only caught 3 of them for 31 yards. How intriguing does this performance look to the coaches who are saying, oh, we got to get this Jefferson kid more involved, give him some of Thielen's targets? I think this might be the beginning of when he's going to emerge. It's just, with Cousins attempting only 26 passes in a game that the Vikings were never really never winning, I don't think, and it ended up being not that close. So, we're not going to see them pass more in games that they're winning. So there's a cap to how good Jefferson can be, but I definitely like this performance.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I saw all those beat reports about Justin Jefferson running with the second string and everyone was making a stink about it, realistically, that's confirmation bias, right? That's just they didn't like him really as a prospect, and then people wanted to find a reason to dog him, right? And I mean, well, tough as the scenes, BC Johnson, Cousins targeted him, and the cornerback jumped the route and intercepted it. At least Justin Jefferson looks better. The thing that's really confusing to me is okay, so you traded away Stephon Diggs, right? And you wanted to commit to the run. So you're so committed to the run, you're not going to bother throwing to the running backs. You're just going to really run the football, right? Because Dalvin Cook made hay last season in the open flat. Mm-hmm. What are you guys, what are they doing? He only saw 2 targets today. What is this team doing? They really need to stop targeting Alexander Mattison, at all. Alexander Mattison is terrible. He really is a bad running back. All right. They need to stop targeting BC John. It's a make work role. Irv Smith is probably just not going to happen. Like Kyle Rudolph's continued. He just saw 1 target, right? At the very least, if you're going to just get completely blown out and roll over, you might as well start firing the coaching staff from now, because there's nothing happening. At the very least, if start targeting Dalvin Cook, that's where he made hay last year. What is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this Minnesota team was really bad today, so I don't know how much of this game is going to be predictive of what they do going forward. But I think that, unfortunately, we might be in for some more games like this.
Oh no, it's going to be pretty predictive in that they're going to be really bad.
Yeah, right, exactly. Joshua Kelly rushed 23 times for 64 yards in the Chargers' Week 2 overtime loss to the Chiefs, adding 2 receptions for 49 yards as a receiver.
Breakout, man. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? he's getting 23 rushes. Come on. I mean, the guy was taking all the goal, a lot of the goal line work last week. And this week he is, getting an increased receiving role. That's impressive, right? He saw more carries than Austin Eckler. But Eckler, by the way, ridiculously good with his 16 carries. Disgustingly good. And this kind of goes back a little bit to Herbert, because at least unlike Tyrod, right? Herbert showed, not really some wheels, right? But at the very least, Joshua Kelly saw 3 targets. His longest catch was 35 yards. So those numbers look a little better than they should. But that's really, really encouraging. I mean, I think if you're an Austin Eckler owner, because Eckler saw four targets and he caught all four, but also if you took Joshua Kelly late in drafts. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward, especially with Tyrod versus Herbert here. But I am genuinely leaning on Joshua Kelly breakout. I mean, like, if Eckler ever misses time, like, Kelly's breaking the slate, right? Like poor Justin Jackson is dealing with like a knee and calf issue, and like, he's clearly been surpassed on the depth chart. And so I'm really, really excited for Joshua Kelly this season.
Yeah, definitely. He was an underrated receiver in college, I think. But you know, he's getting at least as much work as Melvin Gordon did when he was here. So I think what you'll probably see is he steps right into that Melvin Gordon role. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's just as good.
Yeah, I don't know, man, but definitely encouraging. And speaking of other rookie running backs, here's a guy who I've been personally on a crusade for, DeAndre Swift, who rushed 5 times for 12 yards, but more importantly, he caught 5 of 5 targets for 60 yards in the Lions' Week 2 loss to the Packers.
Yeah, breakout for sure. I mean, this receiving workload is what, of course, is most encouraging, and especially nice to see him kind of overcome that bad drop he had in Week 1. You know, I mean, Adrian Peterson is always going to be on, you know, the teams of breakout guys we like taking the carries, but maybe that's okay if Peterson is getting all the, you know, if he's the one that's running between the tackles and taking on the injury risk and Swift is getting the targets. I think we can live with that. So
the bummer here is Kerryon, right?
Yeah, right. Well, Kerryon, I mean, he's another guy who I'm a little bit excited about, but but yeah, nice to see him get that touchdown.
So the Lions had 4 active running backs today, and I'd be more excited. Like, they also had Ty Johnson, and I guess it sort of explains the Kenny Galladay-sized hole in this offense, right? Hmm. Like they're trying to get Quintez Cephas out there. Marvin Jones is just struggling. Oh my goodness. Danny Amendola, 7 targets, 2 for 21 stat line. Like, that's pitiful, right? Like maybe just be done with like Danny Amendola's make work role and give it to DeAndre Swift. Like,
right.
At the very least, you've got like a very capable receiver, right? Like, and they pretty much play at the same target depth. What's the worst that could happen, right? But it's a little like it's. I know this he isn't a rookie, but like so Marvin Hall had 2 targets. He had 1 catch for 24 yards, which is more yards than Marvin Jones had, right? Like if you're a Marvin Jones investor, like are you hoping that like Kenny Galladay comes back, or like, and then Marvin Jones right. can continue being the beta in this offense, or like what?
Yeah, right. Maybe it would help Marvin Jones to have somebody else getting the defense's attention. But I mean, Jones is not someone you ever are relying on a weekly basis, right? He's a, you know, cliche, better in best ball, but I don't know.
Is he better in best ball though? Right, like I mean that's a question that's like worth asking this season.
No, right, for sure.
Is I mean, it's too sure the season's still young, right? But like every week that goes by with Kenny Galladay not in the lineup and Marvin Jones not performing, that's a week that you're losing for having an investor a fairly high pick in him, and he was like going at like wide receiver 34 by the end of it. So if he's not like a startable wide receiver even in best ball, what is he like? Why mm-hmm. what were you doing wasting your picks?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, Jones is not someone that I have personally been drafting pretty much ever since he's been in the league, or at least certainly since he's been on Detroit. But I mean, he always has that one game that really sticks out and makes people, you know, say, oh, I got to get him on my team because he's going to have 1 or 2 huge games. So I don't know. We're still waiting for that. But
So my question is, what's the fair price for that? Because clearly taking him at like wide receiver 36 ahead of guys like Darius Slayton was not the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a good answer for that because I don't, you know, I'm not paying almost any price for Jones. Unfortunately, you'd have to ask someone who's a bigger fan, but I don't know. I know the Lions, like many of my teams, can't wait for Galladay to return.
Yeah, this is just a huge bummer for me because I have like a Lions to win the division ticket at like plus 900. And I have a Detroit Lions to over 5.5 wins ticket as well. So good luck to me. That's money that I will probably not be seeing again. Maybe 5.5 wins, that's probably doable. 6 wins, I don't know. Losing to the Bears, not great at home. So who knows? I guess jokes on everyone who is drafting Matthew Stafford as a quarterback 10 again. Guess they learned nothing from that one last year.
Well, maybe if they throw more to Swift, then we'll see those bets pan out.
Now you're talking.
All right, moving on to news item number 3. Dak Prescott completed 34 of 47 passes for 450 yards and a touchdown in the Cowboys' 40-39 week 2 win over the Falcons, adding 18 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns as a runner. So Prescott really got everyone in this offense involved. Dalton Schultz, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Gallup. What are your thoughts on just the Dallas offense going forward after this performance?
This is what we were promised. This is it. Yeah. Well, Dalton Schultz, not really. Blake Jarwin investors are furious. That was that could have been Blake. What's actually kind of cool is watching poor Zeke just not find the end zone. I had him in cash everywhere, and as everyone did, right? Like if you didn't have Zeke, man, like I don't know what you were doing. But he is really, really good. Like Zeke was and should have been like worthy of that top 3 draft spot this season, right? Like he's really good. And what's actually interesting to me is that he's actually getting a little bit of run more than we're used to in the receiving game without actually checking the box score. How many targets do you think Zeke had in this game?
7.
Yeah, he did. Good. Nailed it.
I was looking right at the box score when you said without looking at the box score.
That's actually really fascinating to me because like I know that the team used Zeke they like to use Zeke in like positive script, but now they're using him in negative script, which I thought was Tony Pollard's role, right? And that's fascinating. But before we go down that route, like because there's a lot, this offense is really exciting, and Mike McCarthy might actually be dragging it down. It's sad to say, like maybe he's readjusting to the NFL, but like man, so CeeDee Lamb is just that dude, huh? So all offseason we saw a lot of snarky like, oh, Michael Gallup is a real wide receiver one in this lineup, when like you and I both know Michael Gallup was a nothing until Amari Cooper showed up. And now it just looks like it's just CeeDee Lamb's role, right? Like, I haven't watched any of these games, but it's not great that like the team can go off of 40 points and just put together all these yards. And like Michael Gallup's like 58 yards. Like he's barely getting more yards than Blake Bell. And he was going as like wide receiver 24, right?
I don't know if it was that high, but I mean,
no, it was that high by the end of it, dude. That high.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Gallup was someone that I was kind of high on coming into the season. And obviously this performance wasn't great. I think what we might see, even if this offense is still this prolific, is that Gallup will have some games. Cooper will have some games. Lamb will have some games, and it'll be maybe a little bit hard to predict when those games are coming.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean,
Amari had 9 targets this week, 14 last week. For as long as he's healthy, he's the alpha. And like, if you like said that he was like the wide receiver too, you're gonna have to apologize to me. That's at HRR5010 on Twitter.
So. Last season, Gallup and Cooper had almost identical stat lines. And I think a lot of people, you know, Cooper was obviously getting drafted earlier, and I don't know if anyone was actually saying, yeah, Gallup is the wide receiver one here, but definitely for their prices, Gallup looked like a better value if you weren't necessarily accounting for CD Lamb. And I'll admit, I was kind of getting on board with that, with like, oh, Cooper is way too expensive. Gallup is going to do the same things. But I mean, if you watch the game today, like Cooper had this one-handed catch where he had to reach out and you're like, oh, that's right. That's who Amari Cooper is. Yeah. I don't know if you see Gallup making that catch. No,
you don't. But like the other thing is like, we knew CeeDee Lamb is good, right? Like, and I know you and I have talked behind the scenes a little bit about this, but like, if you look at like the last two prospect classes as a whole, I think the only guy, so I had AJ Brown ranked as the top wide receiver, and Dave Gaben and I talked about this last week, just like him and I were trying to quantify why we had AJ Brown as a wide receiver one ahead of N'Keal Harry, right? Because the models didn't really say so, but like we were trying to like find some subjective reasoning as to why we were right in hindsight. But I had CeeDee Lamb as like the best wide receiver in this class by like a country mile. And then like basically to me, the last two classes are like AJ Brown and then like CeeDee Lamb. And then maybe, I don't know, everybody else, frankly, like I'm not going to bother ranking them. Right. Like, and that's really how far ahead I think of those two players ahead of like the rest of the field were. And that says a lot, because there's a lot of really good wide receiver prospects. And that's how much respect I have for CeeDee Lamb. So my question really was going into the season, how long until CeeDee Lamb is overtaking Michael Gallup was always a question in my mind. Because I just saw him as just this like freakishly talent, like just a freakish talent, right? And it's a little similar in. And I'm not going to compare Gallup to Corey Davis, because like he's clearly had a significantly better career up to this point, right? But the question was how long until Lamb starts gapping Gallup's like upside. What's insane to me is that I would have thought both of them would have cannibalized each other. I did not expect to start seeing like, oh, CeeDee Lamb is going to be a thing. And like the delta in his price was really, really wide from the other two. So if you wanted a cheap way to get involved in this offense, and even Blake Jarwin was getting very, very pricey by the middle of the season, like by around like June of drafting season, right? The cheapest way to play this until we started getting news from training camps and stuff was CeeDee Lamb. And if you took a lot of people were taking running back prospects ahead of CeeDee Lamb. And man, shame on those guys, right? Like, I mean, like both Pat, like Pat Curran and Peter Overzet were talking about this on multiple podcasts, was like, oh, like there's a chance of you landing on just a bust of a running back prospect, right? Whereas we know CeeDee Lamb and Judy are good. And like, if you have a chance to take Lamb, just take him. And like, I mean, like this time next year, like where is Lamb going in like dynasty startups? Because he was going really high this season, right?
Yeah. Where's he going? I mean, if he keeps doing games like this, I mean, he's outproduced Gallup now 2 weeks in a row, basically
had by a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, basically had the same production as Cooper.
Right, like
I mean, he's a second rounder, maybe.
Yeah, right, and like that's like I was gonna say, like top 12 wide receiver theoretically, potentially like at the end of the second, at the 2-3 turn, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, where and you can make a case, like basically where AJ Brown was going this season.
Yeah,
and I'm actually gonna open up a startup that you and I did together, just to see where he went. And I think you and I talked about this, but I think it was justified back when this happened. He went wide receiver 16 in our startup. One pick ahead of DK Metcalf. Lamb. And Judy went wide receiver 19. And like that's already like Lamb went wide receiver 16. Amari Cooper went wide receiver 12. I got Courtland Sutton wide receiver 14. So
yeah, I think I took Judy, so that is a little bit of a reach. by me, but
but Judy is really, really good too, right? Both like, so you got Judy after Metcalf and after Ridley, but Lamb went earlier than Metcalf and Ridley.
Right.
That's, I mean, that's kind of where they should be going anyway, in my opinion. So, I think where you took him was fine. That's where that becomes a question, right? Like, how much appreciation do we see in his price? And Amari in this one went, I'm trying to find him. One second.
Oh my Amari. Gosh, a bit later than Lamb, I think. Oh, you, no. 3-1.
Just around, just earlier. Wide receiver 13.
Yeah.
Odell Beckham and Kenny Golladay went earlier than Amari. I don't think Odell is going to be that high ever again. So that's over.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. But
I mean,
that's how it goes.
That's just, that's just the cruel world of Dynasty, my friends. Oh, yep. And Julio Jones and wide receiver 13. That's also not happening again. So, but anyway, no one's here to hear about our months-old Dynasty startup. They're here to hear about DJ Moore, who caught 8 of 13 targets for 120 yards in the Panthers' week 2 loss to the Bucks. You know, if you had any fear, really, regarding Moore's week 1 performance, this should really quell any of your concerns. But, you know, with Robbie Anderson having back-to-back 100-yard weeks, do you think he's threatening Moore's floor and ceiling?
Oh, probably not. I mean, Bridgewater attempted 42 passes today. I don't think that's something we're going to see a lot of, but I do think that this offense should continue to be pretty fast-paced and, continue to throw the ball. I don't think the defense is going to be able to hold many other teams from putting up a lot of points. So I think they're going to have to, Robbie Anderson is a guy that I believe Matt Rhule coached at Temple. So there was that connection bringing him in, and we probably, it's narrative, but maybe we should have paid a little more attention to that when we were drafting. I mean, the big thing here is, in drafts, you could get Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel for about the same price. And Samuel had 2 targets today to Anderson's 10. So, I mean, is this like, what are we doing with Samuel? Is he dead?
Yeah, to me, he is. I mean, he was dead to me last year, right? Like, I thought the delta between him and DJ Moore was fine to the start of the drafting season. And then just everyone starts with the exact same, they're the same guy. Oh, what if this? What if that? And then it's just like, okay, so now it's just spiraling out of control here. And I'm not sure how many air yards or whatever Curtis Samuel racked up, and then so then the narrative switches from, well, his he's not really good at, like, he can't make all these deep catches, right? Like, he can't make these deep catches, and now he's like, he can't do anything after the catch. So if he can't do anything like deep, and he can't do anything after the catch, like, is he a running back? Like, what's going on, right? And
yeah, 4 carries for 26 yards today, which was
great.
This is more than Mike Davis, so.
So have people been like wildly overdrafting a shittier Cordero Patterson? Like, no, it's a real question, right? Like, because this target tree is narrowing fairly quickly, right? Like, the second you remove Curtis Samuel and Ian Thomas from this, then all of a sudden all you've got are DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson and maybe Christian McCaffrey. And McCaffrey is not really getting that many targets. This team relentlessly targets Mike Davis the second he, McCaffrey had a miss time with an ankle tweak. And, like, they got a lot of production out of Mike Davis. But, again, if a team really wants to win, you're not going to be targeting the running back all that often. So what's going on? Like, it's a fairly inefficient play. So
yeah, especially when that running back is Mike Davis.
Right. And Mike Davis did really well. So, like, it's exciting to think that this – offense could go back to being a 3-man front with Teddy under center, right? But like DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and CMC, I don't think I'll put up a CMC and DK if his price continues to remain in that 10K range. But like DJ Moore at 6.4 and Robbie Anderson wherever he was this week also was fairly underpriced relative to his actual upside. I mean, back-to-back 100-yard games is no joke. And I've been the dummy who didn't believe in Robbie Anderson. I've left him on the bench twice now. So bully for me. And he's going to be in my starting lineup next week. Like, you can believe that, right? And so it's a real shame because we at Rotoviz really were very, very big fans of Curtis Samuel. And we were incredibly big fans of Paris Campbell when they came out. So it really does actually hurt me a little bit. Well, a lot of a bit. To say, well, Curtis Samuel is officially dust, right? Like this is just a guy who, I mean, it's unfortunate, and I'm rooting for him, but like his price has never really matched his upside, and it was really evident last year, and a lot of people were trying to blame it away on Kyle Allen, and then they were just trying to, without like recognizing the fact that DJ Moore also played with Kyle Allen, and then you know after week one we were hearing, oh, no concern about how all three of these wide receivers got the same target shares, and then it's just like, well, it's not going to last, right? Like if a receiver is inefficient, they just get cut out of the target tree, and that was it with like Curtis Samuel, right? And so you're finding people like making excuses for him in my mentions, like, oh, he dropped this like pass that was thrown behind him, and like it's like, oh, it's, at some point you got to start making throws, right? Making catches, like, not every ball is going to be 100% perfect, and I don't think anyone really cares if you fail to deliver in game situations. So that's it. Like I think Curtis Samuel, you don't drop him, you have to hold him on your bench, but like I don't know how long you can get. I mean, what do you think you're going to – so, like, let's just bring this to from a redraft perspective, and let's just assume you can't trade in redrafts. Who are some guys you'd be looking to drop Curtis Samuel for? Chase Claypool?
Probably, yeah. I think so.
How about –
you know, guys
how about
who,
Justin Jefferson?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, guys who actually – you know, neither of those guys got a lot of targets, and even Jefferson was okay. But I mean, when you see a guy like Claypool getting almost 100 yards on three targets, that I think is a good enough sign that, you know, the team's going to notice that and probably give him more opportunity. So I would definitely drop Samuel for Claypool, I think. You know, most of my teams, I'm trying to pick up running back. So,
yeah, same. But like,
how about Mike Davis? Is he at all interesting? I mean, this is, you know, kind of shifting over to the running back. I think that probably more often than not, we see most of those eight targets going to McCaffrey rather than Mike Davis if McCaffrey's in the game. But I mean, eight targets, 74 yards. That's nothing to sneeze at.
So that's interesting. This is where I brought up like the Curtis Samuel as running back. I brought that up as tongue in cheek, right?
Yeah.
But it's too late to reclassify him for a fantasy perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it'd be really cool if I could slot in Curtis Samuel into my running back slot, but I can't. Right?
I guess, yeah. If you're getting 6 points.
Well, 6 points
which
is better.
I could actually use on a lot of teams.
Right, yeah. I mean, we're getting like three in a couple of our leagues together. So it's like, well, six is pretty good. But yeah, so Mike Davis, it was really efficient. And I can't tell if that's just because they were in just garbage time, like dealing against Prevent, letting him rack up all the catches. And, you know, I am interested in Mike Davis as a possible plug and play guy going forward. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm definitely interested in that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, we saw Saquon go down with what is potentially a season ending injury. And you kind of remember these guys that you draft early, like McCaffrey. I mean, McCaffrey got hurt in this game too. So you want to have these guys who are potentially going to be in really high value roles if someone like McCaffrey or Saquon gets hurt, and Mike Davis, I mean, apparently fits that perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I do think that like Davis is worth picking up speculatively because we do know he's the backup there. And if nothing else, like, we just still want someone. I mean, if it's not him, then you just want to plug in. Godspeed if you're in a position to where you really have to plug in, like, Curtis Samuel as your starter, because because like after 2 weeks of like, I mean, like if you took last week as like encouragement, I don't know why you would have done that, because I really was off the mind that it's like you're heading into just season four, you know, week 18 or whatever it is now of like Samuel being inefficient, right? And I, at some point you just start losing catches and targets and so on. And this is a new coaching staff, and they brought in a wide receiver who they wanted to bring in, and in Robbie Anderson. So, you know, that's just the way, unfortunately, it was going to go. You know, the McCaffrey will have an MRI tomorrow, so there'll be a better idea of what's happening. But mm-hmm. as far as Mike Davis goes, he was really good as the Seattle Seahawks' as a fill-in for them. So, you know, ideally that's you true. Kind of want him in your lineup. So I do think that if he's on waivers, you know, try and get him for your own sake. If nothing else, just as a block, because you really don't want other people picking him up and like starting him in like a, you know, every down roll against you.
For sure. All right, well, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts. For Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010, I'm Blair Andrews at Am I the Real Blair. Thanks for listening. Podcast app. Contact us by email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Did somebody say playoffs? NBA and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered. Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is pushing into fall, and there's no shortage of ways to bet with hundreds of odds, futures, and props. So take advantage of the return of sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day, all night. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.